At the Table with Tony is brought to you by Trafe Hustlin'. That's www.traifhustlin.com. Your home for all things barbecue. Welcome to At the Table with Tony. My name is Anthony Sciglia, better known as Tony Mangia. And we're back. It's 2021. Tony Mangia is back. At the Table with Tony. The podcast is back. The live stream is back. And I am so honored to bring on as my first guest in 2021 on the reboot of the podcast, a filmmaker. His name is Joseph Puleo. Did I say that right, Joe?
That's right.
All right. And he is the director of, I'm going to put it up right here. Here it is right here. I have the CD in my hands, the DVD in my hands. It's called America's Last Little Italy, The Hill. And it delves into the history of St. Louis, Missouri's Italian enclave, Little Italy. And so tonight, for the next hour or so, we're Italian, so we'll probably talk a little bit longer. We're going to delve into the documentary and also talk a little bit about The Hill. Because I guess we should, I'll just get right in. Well, first of all, thank you for coming on the Joe Show. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Same to you.
Thank you. So, and again, I want to thank you for taking some time out for coming to come on the show today and for being my first guest in months. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, totally. Great. We're happy to be here.
Thank you. And, you know, before we went on the air, I said I was going to say on the air, I said to you that I just finished watching it this evening and I could watch this documentary at least once a week. Because it makes me feel good to be Italian American. It makes me feel good that there's still little Italy's out there or Italian enclaves out there that are doing the right thing, that are not forgetting their heritage, that are not forgetting the past, but that are bringing it into the 21st century. Or not 21st century. Is it 21st century? Yeah, I think we're in the 21st century. I don't even know anymore. It's like COVID time. Like, I don't even know what day, what year it is. But again, so really, I was absolutely blown away. I kind of heard about the documentary over the summer. I guess there was some, you know, talk about it. I guess things were kind of getting out there. How would you say that?
Publicly.
So, and I had picked, I guess I ordered it. Probably, I guess it might be October or November.
That's when we first started.
So Joe, first of all, I want to say congratulations on it because really, like I said, the documentary makes me feel good to be Italian American. So, kind of my first question is, why did you decide to make this documentary? Well, kind of give us a little bit of history of it.
So I'm an Italian American myself and obviously very proud of my heritage and also a filmmaker. Went to Lindenwood University in St. Charles. And I thought that this would be a good opportunity to put kind of two passions together, one being the Italian American heritage and two being the love of filmmaking. And so that was kind of the beginning. But how this really started was I was approached by our executive producer, Rio Vitale, who came to me with the idea of potentially doing a comprehensive documentary on The Hill. So there had been a lot of coffee table books and, you know, there's been news stories around St. Louis that have obviously covered the neighborhood and all of the restaurants. But there had never been a documentary that went deep into the history of this neighborhood. And so myself, along with my co-producing partner, Steve Kirkouris, had a meeting with Rio. We kind of discussed everything. And really, Rio's biggest thing was that a lot of the elderly residents on the Hill had started to pass away. And the thought process was, each time one of these hill lifers, these residents of the neighborhood pass away, we're losing their stories as well. And so that really struck a chord with myself and Steve. And within 5 days, we were down on the hill and we had started rolling cameras and we got our first interview. And we really, you know, with having only that short a period of time between the idea coming to us and then going down on the hill and filming, you know, that only being 5 days to a week, there really was no time for pre-production. Wow. So Rio had written a book, which had a lot of photographs in it. There had also been a book by Gary Mormino, who was actually in our film. And so Rio gave me those two books. I read them in overnight. wrote down a loose outline so that I could have questions to ask all of these people that we were going to be interviewing. And that's really where everything started. So the biggest thing for us was we wanted to start off interviewing as many elderly residents as that's the book right there that helped us. Once we started interviewing everybody, the first thing was we got to interview everybody, all the elderly residents that we could find. So I would say we interviewed close to 25 to 30 people that were over the age of 80. And that's where we started. Then that's where kind of the film started to take shape. We started to kind of understand where we were going to be able to take some things. And, you know, I'm just so incredibly happy that we had the opportunity, just because if you see at the end of the film, I think we had lost 7 of the people that we had interviewed. And in the last month itself, I think we've lost 2 or 3.
Really?
So it was a good thing that we did this when we had the opportunity, because then obviously with COVID happening now, these people, there's no way that we would have been welcomed, you know, into their home. And rightly so. I mean, it's just too dangerous for them. But at the time we were able to get into, you know, 90% of the time we were interviewing in these people's homes. And so that's where we started. And then from there, the story started to take shape. We started getting more interviews with kind of the younger generation and seeing where the hill is going.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we interviewed it in chronological order as to how the film is pretty much laid out.
Oh, really?
I mean, if you look at it, that the fact that, you know, the interviews towards the end of the film that you're seeing,
there were younger generation
we interviewed towards the end, and everybody that was older, we had interviewed them right at the beginning. And so it's just kind of funny the way it worked out. But, you know, that was the biggest thing for us, was getting all of these interviews while we had the opportunity.
Now, let me just say something, because I think that the format that you have for the documentary, again, it is chronological. I think that every Little Italy out there, every Italian enclave out there should have somebody like you to document these people and these places, because unfortunately, although the hill is still strong and vibrant, there are many places. I mean, I look 20 minutes away from me is New York City, and Little Italy there, Mulberry Street there, isn't what it once was, which you actually talk a little bit about in the documentary. You actually have a former New York City actor, right? I guess the guy now lives in.
Hey, he lives on the hill now. He came So that's a funny story. Our executive producer Rio actually ran into Larry Romano, who's a New York actor. He ran into him down on the hill. He was having a meal because he was in town to do some a charity event for dogs. He was doing some kind of charity event, and Rio just asked me, you know, we're doing this documentary. Is there any way we could get an interview with you? And Larry obliged. And so the next day we went down and interviewed Larry in the neighborhood, talking about, you know, just that, what happened to Little Italy in New York. I, at the time, we didn't have the title of the film. We didn't know that we were going to call this America's Last Little Italy, the hill. Mm-hmm. That wasn't, we were still just, you know, editing and interviewing at this time. And I thought it was, I thought that it was important, you know, I didn't, budget constraining, we didn't have the opportunity to go to New York and get, you know, multiple people from New York to talk about how their Little Italy went under. This was, you know, I knew that from the beginning, that we wanted to keep this insular.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, the fact that we had that opportunity to get somebody else outside of the neighborhood to kind of talk about exactly what we needed, I thought that was a great opportunity for us, and he delivered with a great line that makes the film, and I think that it's good to hear that authenticity that comes from Larry right at the end of the film when we're going through all of the, you know, that's in retrospect, calling the film America's Last Little Italy, we knew that this was going to draw some kind of pushback, but I hope that the film really makes a case. You know, obviously there's other Little Italy neighborhoods, but the hill, I'm going to have to stick by this. I think that it's one of a kind in the fact that it's still a residential neighborhood. I mean, we were down there for 2 years filming down in this neighborhood, and we interviewed a lot of experts. There's a guy in the film, Phil McCurdy. We went to Denver and interviewed him, flew in Gary Mormino, former president of Unico National, Angelo Cita, mm-hmm. guys that have been to all of these Little Italy neighborhoods. Time and time again, they're saying the Hill is the last one that still exists with that ethnic identity that it really started with. And, you know, I said, if we're going to call it anything, and then we had Monsignor Bomarito say, you know, almost the title, almost verbatim, he almost got the title exactly how we said it. But I felt that this was a compelling way that was going to get people to, A, want to watch the film. But I think that we did make a compelling case that it was America's Last Little Italy.
No, and definitely is, because, you know, I think what was said in the documentary that, and like you just said now, that it is still a residential neighborhood. The people still live here. I think there was one shot that you had in the documentary. Now, I forgot the gentleman's name, but there's a picture of him as a little boy standing on the stoop or standing on the front porch of his house. And then there's the picture of him, I guess, maybe 50, 60 years later of him on the same exact stoop. You know, so I mean, really, that is it's actually beautiful, because so many Italians kind of, you know, once they quote unquote made it in the cities, or in these little enclaves, they decided to move to the suburbs, which you also talked about in the documentary. But you also mentioned something that I think that maybe is really original to St. Louis or to the Hill, is that they had a plot of land that was undeveloped. That was I think the quote was pristine.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able, so after World War II was really kind of when it gave, like, the guys coming back, you know, again, this is all mentioned in the documentary. Again, mm-hmm. I'm talking with Joseph Puleo of America's Last Little Italy, The Hill. And so the GIs are coming back, and they obviously they still wanted to be close to their families, but they didn't want to live in the same houses anymore. Mm-hmm. But by having this property that they had in the hill, on the hill, I guess we'll talk about the hill in a second. But it was able for them to really continue to live where they were where they grew up, without living in the same house.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, coming from the East Coast, coming from Jersey and New York, a lot of times you probably had 3 to 4 generations at one time could be living in the same house. Which I'm sure was the same there, but also the houses there seemed, what they call them, shotgun shacks?
Yeah, shotgun houses. Yes, exactly. Okay.
So there, I mean, they were a lot smaller. So I think the one older woman said to go to the bathroom, she had to go outside, she had to use the back. Mm-hmm. Yep. Let me ask you a question. Do you call it the book house out there, or the buck house out there? We had the bathroom outside.
No, I did hear somebody say that. Yeah, we did hear somebody say that.
But so talk a little bit about that. Talk a little bit about how they, you know, how the people were able to, you know, still stay in their community without living in the same house as their grandparents or their parents.
Well, I mean, one thing that is generally an Italian thing is having a lot of kids. And like my father alone, he has 8 brothers. So, you know, it's that, and that was not, that was something that was seen all throughout the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a huge thing is, and we get into this, like, they had a lot of boys that they were able to send to the war because they had such a high birth rate, you know, so they also had a lot of people living in this neighborhood. So if you have 6, 7 kids living in a home, once they turn the age of, you know, 18, 19, 20, where they would want to leave the house, but they didn't necessarily want to leave the neighborhood. And that really comes to fruition, like you said, after World War II, when they all come back, they all want to stay in this neighborhood, but they don't want to stay in the same house. They're getting married, et cetera, et cetera. So the ability to develop this land and to build all of those homes, the gentleman that you're talking about that was standing on the stoop, he lives in Barrack Court, which is one of these streets that was developed after World War II. And that's exactly how they ended up. They ended up there. So that whole area over to the neighborhood is all new. I say newer, but they were made in the 50s and 60s. And, you know, the other houses are these shotgun homes. So there's kind of that mixture of homes on the hill. But I think that's one of the biggest things that, you know, and that's a Monsignor Polizzi is the associate pastor of St. Ambrose. and to me is the architect behind the hill today. And we give him all the credit in the world because I think he deserves it, in that he sees what's happening across America during this time. In like what you said earlier, Italians, the more that they become successful, started to leave and go to the suburbs, then the Little Italy neighborhood would go under. Mm-hmm. He wanted to make it, why don't we make this neighborhood as nice as possible to where A, no one ever wants to leave, and B, you know, if we have such pride in the neighborhood, we could pass that down from the generations, and maybe we're going to, he called, so the Hill Neighborhood Association that we get into, Hill 2000, mm-hmm. the reason it was called Hill 2000 is because he wanted that to last until the year 2000. And so, you know, in starting this in the 60s, that was, you know, hopefully 40 years from now, this neighborhood still exists and doesn't go under like all mm-hmm. these other. And here we are, you know, today, 2021, the neighborhood is still, you know, vibrant and attractive and is, you know, we're calling it the last Little Italy because we, you know, that's how we feel with this neighborhood, is that, you know, it still exists with that ethnic identity, and you're not seeing that anywhere else.
That is true. And that's a good segue into, I want to talk about, because there was kind of two really big personalities that you delve into, that you talk about in this documentary. Again, the documentary is America's Last Little Italy, The Hill. We'll talk about how you can get it in a little bit as well. But so you kind of delve into these two huge personalities, kind of one in the, not really in the beginning of The Hill, but kind of, I guess, in the 40s and the 30s and the 40s. You have one who is a secular statesman or a secular man, and the other one is a religious man. So you mentioned the religious, the priest. You mentioned Monsignor Salvatore Polizzi, but yes. the other person that kind of had a big impact on The Hill was a man by the name of Joe Cassino.
Yes.
And he was involved with what, the YMCAs?
Yeah, the Southside YMCA. And basically what Joe Cassino did was, getting back to the fact that there was so many kids in the neighborhood, so many boys, you know, he didn't want all of these boys getting into gangs, or B, getting into trouble, things that they shouldn't be doing. And he wanted kind of to focus them in sports. And he was able to start all of these sports clubs to where almost every block on the hill would have their own sports club. And it's really remarkable that from these clubs came, you know, a multitude of incredible athletes, five members of the 1950 soccer team, Joe Garagiola, and of course, everyone's hero, Yogi Berra, as you're seeing, was, you know, kind of a product of these clubs that were started by Joe Cassino. And, you know, it's really a remarkable thing when you think about it, that, you know, if not for this man seeing what's happening around him and really wanting to make a difference in these kids' lives, you know, maybe you don't have a Yogi Berra, maybe you don't have a Joe Garagiola or the 1950 soccer team. And, you know, it's just a testament to, you know, him trying to do what was right and to help, you know, however he could. And it's, you know, that's to us, you know, myself being a huge baseball fan and being from St. Louis, I mean, that baseball is life here. But to have the opportunity to interview five or six of Yogi Berra's childhood friends and hearing these stories that had never been told or never been heard by anybody else. I mean, these guys had obviously told these stories to their family members multiple times because they had them down pat. But no one had ever taken the time to interview these guys on camera. And the fact that we were able to get five or six of these guys, you know, now in their 80s and 90s, talking about Yogi Berra playing, you know, baseball at recess and knocking the ball out of the park. And the fact that Yogi and Joe, you know, they couldn't ever have them on the same team, because if they did, the team wouldn't stand a chance. They had to split the teams up. I mean, it was just, to me, that was, you know, we were just, you know, grinning from ear to ear when we were hearing these stories, because we knew that it was just something that was so rare that we were able to get down on film. And you know, we've already, two of those five or six guys that we interviewed had already passed away since that time. So, you know, that's the last time, you know, anybody was ever going to be able to get the opportunity to hear that story And we're just happy that we were the ones that were able to get it. And hopefully, you know, the biggest thing for us was trying to make a film that stands the test of time, trying to make a film that can be passed down from generation to generation. We had, when we were selling our DVDs, someone came up to us and she said, I need 9 DVDs or 10 DVDs. We're like, wow, that's a lot of DVDs. She said, every single one of the grandkids is getting one of these DVDs to see where they came from. And I think that, you know, obviously that person's from the Hill and they have a familial connection to the neighborhood. But I think all Italian Americans, and not only Italians, I feel like any American can watch this. This is the story of the American dream. And I don't know that there's a better depiction of that than this neighborhood that these, you know, these men were able to come over here, you know, just in hopes of a better life. They worked hard. They built up this own neighborhood. They built their own church. And I mean, this is something that is standing the test of time and still being here in 2021. I mean, these guys came over in the late 1800s and they started building this neighborhood, building their own homes. It's incredible.
Now, I want to ask you a little bit about the people that came to the Hill. So first of all, let's talk a little bit about the geography of St. Louis and of the Hill. So is the Hill actually a hill?
They say it's the highest point. It's high up. It's the highest point in St. Louis.
Okay.
But I mean, it's not like you're climbing up, you're not trekking up a mountain or anything like that. I mean, it's nothing like that, but I mean, it is high up and you can see the arch. There's certain places where you can easily see the arch, like over up on Southwest Avenue, stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, the Hill, it makes it sound like it's like, you know, you'd need to put boots on or something like that. But no, I mean, it's just a higher elevation. So yeah, that's in terms of the name. Yeah. We kind of get into that in the film and why it got its name with the, yeah.
Actually, I'm wearing the shirt here.
That's right. I love it.
La Montaña. So for those that don't know, Montaña is mountain. Yeah. And so as they were coming out of the factory, out of the mines, right? Right.
Yes.
They would say La Montaña, meaning the hill, going up the hill. But yeah. But again, I want to talk a little bit about the people. So the people that came here, came to St. Louis, came to the Hill. Now, where were they from in Italy? What was their predominant region?
That's one of the things that's kind of it's an important part that we touch upon in the film. So what separates this neighborhood generally is the fact that it was a northern Italian neighborhood. So generally, a lot of the time that you talk about these little Italies, it's almost, you know, 99% of the time it's Sicilian. And these guys initially came over from Lombardy, northern Italy. That is where they came over. So at the time when they came over, that was generally very, very northern Italian at the beginning. Then Sicilians started to come over kind of later. And that's whenever we get into in the film that north versus south divide that was seen on the hill. And the fact that you had these two, you know, sides that weren't necessarily getting along at the time. And how they were able to, you know, once the children started going to school together and they didn't have the same ideals as their parents as to why they would necessarily not like someone that was northern or Sicilian. And that's kind of where all of this started to go away in terms of, I mean, not to say that it was gone 100%. But it wasn't to the same extent that it was seen, you know, years prior.
The majority of the people were Northerns and Sicilians. So were there any Calabrese or Neapolitans or?
It was kind of just put into broad terms for us in terms of, I know that there was like five towns. There was Milan, in Bruno, Castelnuovo, I'm drawing a blank because I knew these. I had these down, you know, 2 years ago when we were, because I would ask them, you know, where their family came from, and we kept getting, I could be off on this. You haven't heard any of these. I could be off, but I'm almost positive that was – so it was – yeah, generally at the beginning it was very northern, and then the Sicilians came in, and then, you know, that it was – so it was a northern and Sicilian neighborhood. And Joe DiGregorio, the tour guide in the film, he's a hill historian and also gives tours on the neighborhood, talks about, you know, the fact that the Sicilians in the neighborhood kind of took on the ideals of the Northerners and were a little more laid back, not as, you know, I mean, my family's Sicilian, and it, the funny part is, you know, I'm Sicilian, and we've had some people make comments about the depiction, et cetera. You know, it's like, that's that video, that 8mm that you're seeing during that time, that's my family.
Really?
So, yeah, I thought that was hilarious. They were like, Joe Paleo saying something negative about Sicilians. It's like, that's my family on the video. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So I thought that was, you know, I got a kick out of that.
So Joe, when your family came over, they settled on the hill?
So they came over. I did have family that was on the hill. They came over. It was a lot of the Sicilians went downtown St. Louis. So it was kind of a different. The Sicilians were, a lot of them were downtown, and the Northerners were on the hill. Again, though, the Little Italy downtown went under, and when that happened, they all went to the hill. So that's kind of how that worked out. We didn't have the time to get into that in this documentary. I mean, I said from the beginning, I wanted to do this documentary. We wanted it to be 70 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
We came in exactly at 70 minutes. I mean, it's funny how it worked out, but I really had everything planned out. And in order to, you know, to get into all the Little Italy downtown, the reasons that went under, we just didn't have the time
mm-hmm.
to do it. But I mean, it suffered the same fate that so many other Little Italys did. And the fact that it's just, you know,
When did that quote unquote go under? Was it in the 50s, the 60s?
It was around that time, maybe even a little. I mean, I think it was a 20-year, 30-year process of it started going under, and then towards the 60s. That's where Polizzi came from. Because
but Polizzi sounds like a Sicilian name.
Yeah, and so Polizzi saw what happened to the neighborhood that he initially grew up in, and that was one of the reasons, that was one of the main reasons why he was not going to let this happen to the hill.
Now that
steps up and decides, you know, well, we're going to take the necessary steps to make sure that this neighborhood doesn't suffer that same fate.
Now that's an interesting point, because a lot of Little Italy's, besides the, you know, the Italians, you know, becoming, you know, more established, a lot of times it was the government that would come in and do and use urban renewal as an excuse to break up Italian communities. And this is documented really well in New York, where the BQE is. I don't know if you're familiar with Brooklyn at all, but there was a church, Our Lady of Mount Carmel, and they say by destroying, not, you know, quote unquote destroying the church, they would be destroying the Italian community, because as you mentioned in your documentary, the church really is the pillar of the community.
Yes.
So what they did there in New York and in other places, and even in New Jersey, they did whatever they could to kind of break up these Italian communities. But what I think was amazing was, I guess it was in the late 60s, early 70s, when they wanted to put in I-44?
44, yeah. Highway 44.
And how Monsignor Polizzi kind of like really put his foot down with the group of, you know, men and women on the hill to say, no, you can't just come in here and break up our community without giving us some kind of a concession. Can you explain a little bit about, because I mean, many people probably have no idea what I-44 is or can you kind of explain a little bit about that?
So the neighborhood during this time, Highway 44 was being developed. There was going to be an interstate that was going to run directly through the middle of the hill. And so, you know, obviously Polizzi, this is something that he was not happy about whatsoever. And, you know, Polizzi to this day is a firecracker. So when you're getting an interview, even today, you know, 50, 60 years later, this is riling him up, you know, even just thinking about this. But, you know, the highway was going to come through the middle of the hill, and the fear was that it was going to not only break up the hill literally, but figuratively, would the neighborhood be able to sustain this? And so they were successful in a being able to move the highway over instead of coming directly through the middle. They were able to move it up. It's still going to come through, but it's not going to be as divisive. And Polizzi's idea is we need an overpass. We have to be able to connect these two pieces of the hill to one another. And, you know, and we get into this in the film, you know, at this time, a lot of the people that are living in the neighborhood are first, second, third generation Italians. And, you know, these first, second generation, a lot of them don't even speak English. This neighborhood is all they've ever known. They walk everywhere. They don't even own cars. This neighborhood was completely self-sufficient. Everybody refers to it as a city within a city. So there was no reason for these Italians to ever leave this neighborhood. Hmm. Now that this highway is going to come through, and we show a map in the film kind of showing, okay, if you don't have the overpass and you have to go to one of these busy streets that are, you know, on the outskirts, it's going to take these people forever to walk to church, to be able to walk to the grocery store. And so Polizzi really comes up with this idea. We need to get an overpass. And so they go to all the necessary people that you would go to. They go to local government and they're turned down, and they go to Jefferson City, which is the capital of Missouri, and they're turned down. And so the only place left for them to go is the federal government. And so luckily at the time for them, there was an Italian American who was the Secretary of Transportation, John Volpe. And so they had a little sit down with John Volpe and explained the situation. And Volpe actually visited the neighborhood a few times and was able to see the neighborhood. And obviously it was, you know, something that he understood. This is a very, you know, this is a special neighborhood. And so they talked to Nixon, and they were able to, everyone agreed, we got to save this neighborhood. We got to keep this neighborhood connected. So they were successful in getting their overpass. And it's really just, I mean, that's a huge part of the lore of the hill, was the fact that, you know, this little neighborhood in St. Louis was able to go and take on the government, and they were able to win. And it's really the will of Polizzi. He's someone that has an extremely strong will, but he also has the ability to get people to come together for a common goal. And that's something that, you know, time and time again, in looking at this neighborhood for these last 2.5 years that we've seen, you know, I don't see, you know, we talked about this, myself and my co-producers and, you know, a lot of the people that we interviewed. I don't see why this neighborhood can't be duplicated by other neighborhoods, other cities, things like that. The hill is at this time, especially, you know, they were generally uneducated. They didn't have money. It's not like they were rich, you know, but all they had was their pride in being Italian, their pride in their neighborhood, their pride in their home, trying to make it as nice as possible. And to have this neighborhood have some of the highest property value in all of St. Louis, I mean, that's just incredible. And I don't see why other people can't kind of follow that trend to, you know, if you just make the neighborhood as nice as possible. And the thing that was remarkable with the hill, everyone bought in. And you hear that there's a guy in our film, Jim Merlo, and they were kind of self-policing each other. You hear famous stories of hill residents, of Monsignor Polizzi knocking on your door, telling you, I think it's time to get the lawnmower out, things like that. I mean, he was definitely a micromanager, but I don't know that there's other, I don't know that in other neighborhoods, someone doing that, you wouldn't just get told, you know, to go screw yourself, but they just did. It was like everyone bought in. And what Merlo said in the self-policing was, if we saw something happening on the neighborhood that wasn't bringing pride to the neighborhood, you were going to hear about it. And so I think that's a huge part of what makes the hill, you know, still makes it unique and still, you know, lasts to this day, is if they were seeing things that were happening on the neighborhood that they necessarily didn't agree with, you're going to get an earful. And there was that buy-in. They all bought into this idea that let's make this neighborhood as nice as possible and let's preserve, you know, our heritage. And they were able to pull it off.
I want to thank again, this is where I'm being joined today by Joseph Puleo. He is the filmmaker of America's Last Little Italy, The Hill. Now, Joe, how can people purchase the DVD? How can they see? Can they purchase it?
Is it streaming?
Like what's the...
So we got it all. We got it all. If you go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/thehilldoc, or you just search America's Last Little Italy, The Hill on Facebook, you'll see we have our DVD for sale. We have a PayPal link. We also got a Facebook shop, so you can click on that and get it that way. We'll get the DVD sent out to you if you want to own, you know, a physical copy of the DVD. We also are available streaming on Amazon Prime Video, and that's available for rent or purchase. You could rent it for $4.99 or purchase it for $9.99, and the DVD is selling for $20. So, you know, we have all the avenues covered. If this film is something that you want to, you know, take a look at, we got you covered, and you know, we'd love to get as many people to see this film as possible, and you know, hopefully just bring this neighborhood to the forefront, but also, like you said earlier, celebrating that Italian heritage, to when you watch this film, you can have a sense of pride, even though this isn't your neighborhood, this is your culture, this is your heritage. And I think that's what's resonating with so many people across the country is, you know, when we premiered the film in July at the Filmmaker Showcase here in St. Louis, and it was breaking ticket records because, you know, A, it's extremely popular in St. Louis, and with COVID, you know, the ability to watch the film wherever and streaming is a lot easier than going to a movie theater. There were many factors, but also this film resonates with people, and they were selling tickets in Italy. In Italy, they were selling tickets in New York and in Chicago and all throughout where these large Italian communities are. And you know, we were shocked. We couldn't believe really that the film was traveling before we were putting in the resources to try and reach these people with sponsored ads or anything like that. We were just, you know, we put the film into this festival, and then all of a sudden, you know, we started getting all of these people watching it. It's really, you know, we just can't believe how much the film is resonating, and we couldn't be happier.
Well, I got to say, buy the DVD, because, you know, again, you could take it out, you know, if you watch it when you get it and you put it on a shelf for a week and then watch it again, because really, like I watched this, I think two times. Yeah, it was two times I watched this, and I got something different out of the first time and out of the second time. So you really pick up different things, and you pick up more things. So I have to say, buy the DVD. Go to the Facebook page. It's on the bottom of the screen. Facebook.com/thehilldoc and buy the DVD. I mean, come on. And again, it's supporting Italian Americans. So that's the most important thing.
100%.
Are there you have t-shirts with The Hill or hats or stuff like other kind of member merchandising?
Yeah, we got it all. Yeah, we got it all. We have the hats, we got the t-shirts. So the shirt you're wearing is actually, we did a collaboration with Series 6, which is a local St. Louis clothing supplier. So they did our first run of t-shirts, and then later on, so we started doing our own products. We have our own hat that had the logo on it. We have t-shirts, sweatshirts. And so those are being done by a company actually on the Hill themselves. Maestro Screen Printing is taking care of all of our screen printing things from now on, in terms of the t-shirts and long sleeve shirts and sweatshirts. We turned into just a walking shop. Everybody wanted everything, especially for Christmas. It was extremely popular, but you know, it's something that, you know, we couldn't be happier with all of the people who, you know, want to represent this neighborhood, not just in St. Louis, but you know, across the country, to really bring it to the forefront. And I think that, you know, this is just a great opportunity for us.
I was telling my wife after we watched this, I guess it was last month, probably in, I guess it was the end of November. I told her, I said, we are going to plan a trip to St. Louis ASAP. But I want to get into a little bit about, because we are living in different times. We are living in the age of COVID, so to speak. So how is St. Louis and the Hill in particular handling this whole COVID pandemic?
Well, the people, so there's St. Louis City and St. Louis County. It's kind of odd the way that St. Louis is set up. The city where the Hill is, they haven't suffered, you know, quite as bad in terms of the shutdowns. They've been able to keep the restaurants open, but at limited capacity. A lot of them obviously doing the carry out and the curbside pickups and stuff like that. And so they've been able to kind of, you know, hopefully weather that storm and be able to come back out of this. But, you know, we've just been so happy that we've been able to help the neighborhood and these restaurants in bringing, you know, a lot of attention to the neighborhood, definitely in St. Louis, to where people are saying, you know, let's go out to the Hill and let's have a meal out there and let's support these local businesses and these family owned restaurants that and family owned businesses that you see throughout the neighborhood. I mean, like we say in the film, there's 30, 35 restaurants, family owned businesses on the Hill. I mean, that's the thing. I think there's another thing that gets lost is the sheer scope of the neighborhood being 52 square blocks that you'll be, you know, there's the hub of the neighborhood, which is obviously St. Ambrose, which is where mm-hmm. the photo is. St. Ambrose across the street, you have Milo's, which is the Bochy Garden, which is a famed place in St. Louis. And then right across the street, you have the beautiful Piazza that was just built, which is really remarkable. But down the street, you got Vitale's Bakery. You go even further in the opposite direction, Di Gregorio's Market. And I mean, but you could go 3-4 blocks down, and you'll be in the middle of all homes. And then you'll look over to the right or the left, and there's three restaurants. So it's really, I mean, it's just, you know, the Hill is, and that's something at the end of the film that we wanted to talk about, where a lot of the people, when we're saying Little Italy, they're thinking, what do you mean? There's still Little Italy in San Diego. There's still Little Italy. We had somebody message yesterday about that there's a Little Italy in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Okay, there's a lot of restaurants in Chicago and a lot of, but you know, we that was one of the things that a lot of the experts, you know, brought to our attention multiple times was the Med Complex or the college that they put down in the middle of the neighborhood, and it kind of broke up that neighborhood and stuff like that. And it's, so you're not seeing necessarily the same, you know, it's like, it's so hard to get into the minutia of what is a Little Italy versus what isn't a Little Italy. Worse, this is a neighborhood. You come down here and I can't wait till you come here, and we'll definitely go have a meal and take you around and able to see everything. I think you're going to be really amazed at what it is down here. The fact that you're seeing it, that it's still a residential neighborhood that you can, you walk everywhere and you see that every, I mean, we were just down there, you know, this last month seeing the, what we were selling our DVDs. We go down there and we're across the street from Di Gregorio's and we're seeing people that we interviewed in the film walking in Di Gregorio's and everybody's saying, hey, how you doing? And they coming over and talking to us and stuff like that. It's like, this is their neighborhood. This is their grocery store that they go to. They don't have to, you know, travel outside of the neighborhood. They just walk down to the grocery store and pick up what they need at the market. I mean, it's really a throwback, and I don't think there's any place like it.
I mean, that's the thing, like you said, like, you know, it's kind of, you know, odd. I mean, there are places here in North Jersey where, you know, you're in a residential neighborhood, or you have a restaurant, mm-hmm. you have a bakery, but really when you think of Little Italy, quote unquote, Little Italy, you know, capital L, capital I, you know, you think of just, you know, restaurant after restaurant after right. restaurant, maybe a shop here, a right. pastry shop there, but really it's, that's not, I mean, it is, and it isn't what Little Italy exactly. or, you know,
it's so hard to kind of define it and to decide what is, you know, it's like the people that if they have an issue with the title or they, you know, it's like, just watch the film is all we can say to them, because I think when they get that sense of community throughout, you know, the 70 minutes of the film, I think they're going to come out of this and hopefully just be happy. You know, that's the thing. When we, we knew that it was going to have a little bit of pushback, but one of the early festivals that we did, and we were talking, there were people from New York, and I was like, oh man, I don't know, you know, what the reception is going to be like out there. You know, are they going to be upset? Or that we called it this. It was the exact opposite. They were like, Little Italy turned into Chinatown. We can't wait to hop in on a plane and come down and visit the hill after. It's exactly what you said. And we're hearing that time and time again. And we just can't, you know, we couldn't be happier of the reception that we're getting from all of these Italian Americans and just people in general, seeing the neighborhood, getting excited about it, wanting to visit. And I don't think that, you know, there's nothing better that we could have hoped for when we started this project, and have everybody, you know, just be so incredibly receptive.
Again, I am Anthony Shilley, being joined tonight by Joseph Puleo. He is the director of a great documentary that you have to go out and purchase. America's Last Little Italy, The Hill. Here it is. I have the actual DVD in my hand. Actually, it's not in the case because I watched it this evening. You see, so watch it. Don't just buy it. Watch it, because again, like we're saying, you know, like I told you, Joe, after watching it the first time, and now watching it again, I really want to come. So I get excited. You know, I get pumped up when I see things like this, because, you know, again, there are the great little Italian enclaves around the country. And now with COVID, it's hard to really travel the way I would like to. But even I live in the great state of New Jersey, the Garden State. And there are so many little Italian towns, quote unquote, Italian towns, mm-hmm. throughout the state that nobody even heard of. You know, there's a town called Bernardsville out in Morris County by me. Oh, no, actually, maybe Somerset. I don't even know where it is, but it's like in the middle of nowhere. It's like little farms. But yet the people that came there were Italians. So really, I mean, this gets, watching this DVD gets me excited. Mm-hmm. It gets me passionate. It gives me pride that there are people like you and people like the guys and gals on the hill that want to preserve our heritage. And I want to talk, I know we have a couple of minutes left, but I think the one thing we didn't talk about, which is at the table with Tony, we got to talk about food a little bit.
Of course.
We got to talk about food. So there are a couple of dishes or a couple of specialties on the hill that I guess that kind of either were originated there or kind of that you know, St. Louis's hill, the hill is known for. And one of them is, we have them here in Jersey, we have them in New York City, but toasted raviolis. Talk about toasted raviolis.
So when I first started the project, there's all these things. There's like three synonymous things with the hill in St. Louis. Toasted ravioli, Yogi Berra, Joe Garagiola, and the 1950s soccer team. So we knew that those were going to be things that we probably had to touch upon in the documentary. Obviously, the Yogi and Joe thing was, from the beginning, something that really excited me. The toasted ravioli thing is something that's extremely nuanced and somewhat complicated. And in doing all of the interviews, so we started interviewing everybody and we're asking them about toasted ravioli. The issue is, toasted ravioli is just ravioli. It's like deep fried ravioli. And so what happened is, there's two restaurants currently on the hill laying claim to inventing toasted ravioli: Charlie Gito's and Mama Campisi's. We were doing all of the interviews, and I didn't know this. Our executive producer knew everything about the toasted ravioli. I didn't. I just knew that, you know, somebody said that a guy dropped them in on accident to the deep fryer, and thus toasted ravioli was born. And that's basically the story. But what complicates things is that Charlie Gito's and Mama Campisi's, they're just simply in the building that another restaurant was in, you know, 70 years ago when this happened. So now you're getting into Angelo's versus Old Danny's, and they both are claiming that they invented. So I'm like, to put this to a national audience, that if they have never heard of toasted ravioli, now they're getting told there's four Italian restaurant names all laying claim, all having a different, you know, ideas to how this happened. I just thought it was going to be way too convoluted. And, you know, that's a short film, or that's a documentary.
Yeah, that make your head spin, I guess. After,
I'm sitting there and I'm like, how are we ever going to make this you know, easily digestible to a national audience to for them to understand, to comprehend what's going on. So that was really to St. Louisans, that was something that was going to be heartbreaking that we were not going to be have that in the film. But we just there was so many decisions that had to be made when you're talking about 120, 130 years of history. And, you know, the fact that we had this, you know, we wanted to do it in 70 minutes and then we ended up having a PBS cut that we did that was shown locally. And, you know, we're in the process of potentially getting that out and hopefully, you know, trying to get a national PBS airing, but they wanted the film cut down to 60 minutes.
Wow.
So now I got to cut it down, you know, I got to cut another 10 to 12 minutes off of that. So there was just so much that had to be covered. And I thought, and the toasted ravioli thing was taking 5 to 6 minutes for us to explain it, that it's something that had to hit the cutting room floor, but it's definitely something that is synonymous with the Hill, synonymous with St. Louis. And we interviewed a guy, Joe Lonegro, who's in the film, and he claims that he was there the night that it happened. He was a busboy, and Fitz, I believe, was the name of the cook, Fitz or Fritz, and he had a little too much to drink, and he apparently dropped the ravioli into the deep fryer, and they put it on a plate with a little marinara, and thus toasted ravioli was born. And at that time, it wasn't breaded. That's something that came later. It was just, you know, because it was an accident.
Yeah.
Like, oh, well, maybe if we bread these with the, you know, that'll be even better. And so now that's, you know, the toasted ravioli that everyone knows and loves to this day is that came later. But yeah, that's just, it's quite the story, and it's a lot to get into and to unpack.
Like you said, that's probably its own documentary.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. The whole time I was like, I know we're going to break some hearts here, but that's a documentary for another day.
And the other thing that's different in St. Louis, as I guess opposed to other Little Italy's or even here in Jersey, is that if you can explain what Provel cheese is on the pizza.
Yeah, the Provel cheese. That's another St. Louis staple. We love our Provel cheese. I don't necessarily know the exact ingredients. I know it's like multiple cheeses mixed into one.
I think they call it a cheese product, right? It's not actually cheese.
Exactly, because it's like a lot of things combined into one, and it's not. It's like gooey cheese. It's not like mozzarella, where you know you take it up from the pizza and it comes with it. This like sticks to it. It's got more of a, it's very textured, and it's like a smooth, it's like a smooth, smooth and gooey, as where mozzarella is textured and it'll pull up. So it's definitely different. It's definitely something St. Louis, and like our pizzas, we have flat pizzas. The thin crust is St. Louis style, and Emo's is probably our most famous, pizza place.
And you do square cuts though? You do the cuts?
Yeah.
Square cuts, right?
Well, they call it the square beyond compare is their slogan. And yeah, that it's not slices, it's squares. And it's almost like crackery. The crust is kind of crackery. It's crunchy. And I love it. I mean, but I'm St. Louis to the core. So, I mean, I'm all for St. Louis style pizza.
So Emo, that's like the big one, right? Emo is kind of like the originator or the.
Yeah, Emo's is the biggest one out here. But there's a lot. I mean, if you go to any of the restaurants on the Hill, they're all going to be serving St. Louis style pizzas. There's newer pizza places that are offering thicker crust and stuff like that. I think one just opened up like a month ago. So it's good to see new business coming in down there, especially during this time, which I mean it's got to be tough to be opening a business right now. But
one of the most cliche questions, though, I have to say is it sauce or gravy down there?
Oh, it's sauce. We're sauce all day, no gravy. I don't know. That's more of an East Coast thing, correct?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess it's like. it's like a New York, Philadelphia. Philadelphia says gravy, kind of New York, New Jersey. They were kind of split. I always grew up saying sauce, but
we're definitely sauce.
My wife actually she commented there's a restaurant in Brooklyn called Speedy Romeo, and the owner's originally from St. Louis.
Oh,
and
wow.
He makes a pizza with the Provel cheese on it.
Oh, great. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Good to see their reach in beyond.
Yeah, his name is Justin. I'm gonna totally mess up his last name. It's Bazdarich. That's his last name. But his dad, I believe, is Italian and whatever, you know, Bazdarich is. But yeah, great guy. Justin's a great guy.
Great.
Joe, you there? I thought I lost you. Sorry.
No, I'm here.
But no. So what would be the quintessential hill meal? Like, what would you start out with? What would you end with? Is it, you know, is it the cannoli? Is it the tiramisu? Like, what? Give us what are you eating on the hill?
Yeah. So I've had this question a lot throughout. Everybody wants to know my favorite. So my favorite, in terms of, I'm a big sandwich guy. I love sandwiches. Adriana's got the meatball sandwich. I think that's the best meatball sandwich on the hill. What they do that's different. They pound the patties. They pound the meatballs to make them into patties, so they're flat. Oh. And so you're getting a meatball in every bite, because generally with a meatball sandwich, you just get that one bread bite.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this is, you're getting meatball in every bite. I think that is, to me, the best sandwich on the hill. I think Antonino's has the best toasted ravioli. Those are homemade, and I've seen them. I've seen them make them in person. It was quite the sight. They've been on the Food Network. They're kind of known as having the best toasted ravioli on the hill. Those are phenomenal. The bakery, we love both Missouri Bakery and Vitali's Bakery are my favorites personally. But they got this thing called the chocolate drop at Missouri Bakery. And it's like a flat, almost like a donut with chocolate on top. Ooh. It's like a, I don't even know how to describe them. They're round, little, and they're flat with the chocolate on top. They call them chocolate drops. Those are phenomenal. And that they made a joke. One of the guys, so Ben Gambaro is Missouri Bakery, who's in the film. He recently passed away. But we were talking off camera, and he was making a joke along the lines of, you know, with the McDonald's sign, like more the, you know, a billion patties. So it's like a billion chocolate drops sold from the beginning. Because that's the thing. You go down to Missouri Bakery, you can't be leaving without one of those. They're just too good. And so those are really the places that I would go. And you know, you really can't go down on the hill and not get a good meal. I mean, Canetto's, who's in the film, John Tony's, who's in the film, they got it both too. They got Sicilian, they got Northern. So they got, you know, there's the Northern restaurants where you'd be looking more towards the you know, the cream sauces, and then you'd be the Sicilian. John Tony is Sicilian from Sicily. He came over and made this restaurant. He's in the film. He's got the funny, eat is number one was his line. when we asked that, I said, what is it about Italians and food? And it was just simply, eat is number one. That's what we do. We eat. We're Italian. We eat. And I don't know if there's a more true line in the 70-minute film than "we're Italians, we eat." I mean, that's
the absolute truth. I think about it. We're eating from the time that we're born to the time that we die. So whether it's at a baptism, a wedding, a funeral, Sunday dinner. I know you touch a lot on Sunday dinners in a documentary. Oh. I mean, it's just faith. I always say it's the three F's: faith, family, and food. Those are the most important things for any Italian American.
Yeah. Well, that was funny. When I interviewed everybody, I called that the triangle.
Yeah.
And I would ask them about that. And they were like, well, we got to add the church. We got to like, or it was like St. Ambrose. Yeah. I mean, yeah, faith was in there as well. Yeah. It's just, that's everything.
I do want to post here. This is, this, I mean, looking at the picture, I mean, I love visiting churches. I'm a big looking at the statues, looking at the churches, the architecture, the stained glass. And I, on the screen right now, I have the picture of the exterior of St. Ambrose Church. And here's a shot of the interior of St. Ambrose Church, but really is such a gorgeous church.
Incredible.
And built, you know, built on the backs of the Italian immigrants.
Yes.
There was one line that really, really, really struck home to me in your documentary. Again, I'm talking to Joseph Puleo. He is the director of America's Last Little Italy, The Hill. And it was Monsignor Bomarito says, as the church goes, the neighborhood goes.
Mm-hmm.
And it speaks volumes.
100%. We were actually, when we heard that line, myself and my co-producer, you know, we hold on him at the end of the film. That's the line that ends the film. Mm-hmm. And the second he said it, we looked at each other and it was like, oh my God, could you, like, it's so profound. And he was one of the last people that we interviewed, and, you know, to just put it so eloquently and to sum up the entire film with, you know, his last subsequent lines even before that, to put everything together and to just kind of encapsulate what the neighborhood is all about, to where, you know, and then to have the opportunity after that. So so we interviewed him, I would say that was in December. And then like a year and a half later, a year later, we then were filming inside of the church. And that's where that photo is from that you showed of the four of us in the neighborhood. And to just have the opportunity to go into the church, such a sacred place, and to just be given the opportunity to just film whatever I wanted to forever, for however long I wanted to, with our camera, with our camera guy, and myself and Steve, my co-producer, we had a list. So we had that camera guy, we had one day we were going to get, and I had 70 shots, not just of the church, but throughout the neighborhood. We had 70 shots and we were going to get them in 12 hours. And we started in the church. That was the first place that we went. And I would say it was about 2 hours we just spent in the neighborhood, inside the church, going through all of the, you know, beautiful things that we had the opportunity to film of that church. And my thing was, you know, I wanted to separate the way that we lit the interview from the way that you see the church. Mm. And I wanted, and this is something that myself and Steve talked about, we didn't want to turn the lights on in the neighborhood. We kind of wanted to be like, we weren't supposed to be there, that we were like, we just wanted to have the opportunity to go in and just film everything and just kind of take it all in. I think that by keeping it dark or just not completely lit, you know, to have that kind of silhouette of the cross that we're able to show. And I just, that really was one of my favorite parts of making this documentary was, you know, what that church means to the neighborhood it can't be put into words. And hopefully we did it justice and one of the things that we did that was really cool is that song that you hear at the beginning of the film. Steve actually wrote that song. Hmm. And the song that's played with the title sequence, it's kind of like a 60s rock song almost. And that was something that we wanted to start the film that way, to show that this is not a cliche, not going to be a cliche film. I didn't want to go with like opera music, and then you would get, okay, well, this is just a ripoff of The Godfather or something like that. We wanted to show that this is, we're doing our own thing here. And so we actually Steve recorded all of those voices that you're hearing singing almost like a choir part. Hmm. And he actually went into St. Ambrose. They gave us the opportunity. We went into St. Ambrose and Steve actually did like an echo chamber and played the song and then played the voices in the church and then recorded the reverberation, was able to put that. So when you're seeing that at the beginning of the film, we wanted everything circles around that church. And we thought, what better way than to actually have our song be played in St. Ambrose and use that man-made echo chamber to, and that was one of, you know, Steve scored the film and he did the music, and you know, that's a huge character of the film. And, you know, he just absolutely knocked it out of the park with the not only the original songs, but also, you know, his needle drops throughout and how he, you know, wanted to segue us with music. And, you know, it's just, it's, to me, it's one of the best parts of the entire film.
I mean, again, the documentary is a must see, especially for any Italian American, near, far, New York, California, Chicago, even down in Tampa. You know, there's a lot of Italians down in Florida as well. So you have to see this documentary. But before I let you go, Joseph, there's one image I want to put on the screen, because really, it's the cover of the DVD. Just look at that. Just look at that picture. I mean, really, it speaks volumes. I mean, like if the picture could talk, what are these guys thinking? What are these guys saying? You know, what's the conversation? It's just that to me is a beautiful slice of Italian Americana.
Yeah, there was the movie poster was honestly one of the most difficult things that we ever had to make a decision on in the entire process of making the film. And we had gone through a lot of different ideas. We had a graphic designer. We worked on, we were going to actually like draw a cityscape, and have the arch in it with the hill at the bottom. And we kind of worked on something like that. It was kind of more of a graphic design, idea. And we had another photo that we had used, and we kind of tested that among people that we knew, and it wasn't really getting the reception that we initially had hoped for. So we were kind of just at a loss. And I was like, well, at the time we had not filmed the B-roll. We had not gone out and filmed like that shot that's in the background. We hadn't done that. So I thought, well, maybe I'll find something, a striking image from something that we filmed. And Rio, who had done the book and also the neighborhood organization, they donated photos and let us, you know, kind of have whatever we wanted. And I had like 2,000, 3,000 photos that I had to go through, and I was logging them as we went. You know, if there was anything St. Ambrose, it went into a folder. If there was anything, baseball, went into a folder, Polizzi folder. So I've started logging all of these photos, and I just happened to be going through these photos, and I saw that image. And when I saw the guy with the cigarette staring directly at the camera and the guys playing Bocce, I said, you know, what better image to sum up the neighborhood than what you're seeing on your screen right there? And really what was incredible for us was the fact that it was a landscape photo. I knew I was going to have the opportunity to make both a movie poster in which we would just have the cigarette guy and, you know, the guy holding the Bocce ball in the background, that we were going to be able to, exactly, we were going to be able to cut that photo down and you would still get that same imagery. But also the fact that we'd have a landscape photo that we could use for, you know, Amazon Prime if we decided to self-distribute, or, you know, a cover photo for Facebook. It's very rare to have that ability to have one kind of synonymous image for your film. And I didn't think that there was anything better than that image when I saw it. And I just sent it to the guys, and, you know, we were able, you know, it was just, we all couldn't believe that we had seen this photo. And one of the guy who donated the photo, his grandpa is in the picture.
Wow.
And we just got so lucky that all these people came forward time and time again for us, and just, whether it be photographs or the 8mm, I mean, to have this 8mm at my disposal, to have five or six families, including my own, come forth with all of these, with these 8mm reels from the Hill neighborhood from the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, you know, to have, I had about 30 to 40 years of 8mm that I was able to go through. So we didn't have to go to stock footage very often, except for, you know, when we're talking about the war, we want to show the war when we're talking about, but when you're talking about Sunday dinner, that's my family having that Sunday dinner. You know, when you're talking about, you know, the greatest thing, I couldn't believe it, was when they were talking about the shotgun homes, and he was talking about how they would build the homes on stilts and then fill in the basements. One of the people on the neighborhood, one of the men that would film this 8mm, it's almost like he knew that one day we were going to need this footage. He would just go out and film everyday life in the neighborhood with his camera. It was almost like it was meant to be, and that this was going to be unearthed in, you know, this 8mm is coming from people's basements and stuff that has not been seen in 40 years. My own aunt, she didn't even think that it existed, and they had converted it to VHS, and I had that, and I'm like, I gotta have this digital. We gotta find this. So they're looking throughout the house, and they pulled out. I was over there, and she said, "I think this is it, Joey." Pulled it out, and I opened the top, and there it is, just like 15 8mm reels. And I couldn't believe it. I ran over to Rio's house, and he started transferring it to digital. And we just, I mean, you're looking, Sunday dinners in there, you know, the St. Ambrose Church, everybody. And then the people that came forth with the Highway 44 that were able to show what it looked like when they demolished all of these people's homes, you know, the homes that these people had lived in, you know, for all of these years, 30, 40, 50 years that these people had lived in these homes, and then their neighborhoods taken away because they're going to build the highway. I mean, and to have that visually, it's one thing to hear someone say it, but to be able to put the visual out there and you could see that, see a row of homes get demolished. I mean, it's just, we couldn't be more grateful and thankful to the people of the neighborhood that came forth and to everybody that was so helpful with us in making this project.
Well, Joseph, I want to thank you so very much for taking time out today. This has been a blast. But before we end, I want people to know how they could get the DVD or how they could watch the documentary. Again, give us your websites, yes. Instagram, stuff like that. Again, I am being joined by Joseph Puleo. He is the director of America's Last Little Italy, The Hill. So, Joe, just give us, you know, tell us a little bit about how we can find the documentary, how we can find you, how we can see what's going on in St. Louis.
Yeah, definitely. So the Facebook is facebook.com/thehilldoc, or you could just search America's Last Little Italy, The Hill. When you get on the page, we have a shop, so you can see the DVD and the hat are available in the shop. And there's also a post on there that you can see multiple posts about where to buy the DVD. We have a PayPal link. It'll take you directly there. Buy the DVD. It's $20, and we'll ship it out to you. And you'll be able to physically own a piece of Italian American history, as Tony has. And the other way, we did this for the people that you know, everybody's into streaming now, and we wanted to have that ability. And so the film is available on Amazon Prime. If you Amazon Prime Video, if you just go on there, and that's also on our Facebook page. If you go on there, we have the links. We have the links to everything as to how to get the film. That's everywhere. But if you just go on Amazon and search America's Last Little Italy, The Hill, you can rent or purchase the film on Amazon Prime. And, you know, we're just, if it's something that you enjoy, please, by all means, leave us a review on Amazon. Leave us a review on IMDb. Share the movie trailer. We have a 30-second trailer that we've just cut that is now promoting the Amazon. Share the video on Amazon. Share our Amazon video on your Facebook. Anything that we could do just to get this film, you know, to as many people as possible, and share this with Italian Americans, you know, everywhere, is something that we're very excited about the opportunity. And you know, the reception has been great, and we just couldn't be happier. And and hope that everyone who's listening to the podcast goes out and checks the movie out, because you know, if you're Italian American, I think this is something that's going to resonate with you for sure.
Amen. And it is, like I said to you, after watching this, I watched it two times already. I want to go to St. Louis. I want to go now, but I got to wait. I got to wait until things kind of come out.
We're going to have a good time.
But again, Joseph, I want to thank you so very much. This really means a lot for you to come on the show today. Thank you.
Of course. I really appreciate the platform and you having us on. I really appreciate it.
It's my honor. Like I said, I mean, this, what you're doing is so important because you are documenting a piece of Italian Americana. And if we don't document it, unfortunately, as the years go by, we have the chance of losing it. So we have to really, you know, stand behind it, document it, but also fight for what's ours, you know, fight for our Italian, our little Italy's, for our Italian enclaves.
Totally.
So I just want to mention one thing. On Thursday night at 7 p.m., I'll be coming back on At the Table with Tony. I'll be joined by Robert and Shannon Tennell. Robert is the director of Feast of the Seven Fishes, a great, fun family movie that came out. It revolves around the Feast of the Seven Fishes. I know we didn't talk about that. I don't know. Do they do the Feast of the Seven Fishes out in St. Louis?
They don't, but I've actually – that film is on Amazon. And for our film, it says if you like our film, you might like this film, and it's the Feast of the Seven Fishes. And I think
that's perfect segue.
Yeah, I know. I think it's funny. I mean, it's I think we're the two most popular Italian films on Amazon right now.
We need more of them. So I hope that you. Right. I mean, I want to have you come back and talk more about, you know, kind of like your background as well, because I want to know what else you're doing in the future. But we'll definitely have to sit down. Maybe when I come out to St. Louis, we could do a little a podcast, go visit some places. So again, that's going to be Thursday night. Joined by Robert and Shannon Tennell. I'm looking forward to speaking with them. Again, I want to thank you so much, Joseph. Go and get this DVD. Go and buy the DVD. Go on to Facebook. It's on the bottom of the screen, facebook.com/thehilldoc, and check it out. Google Joe. And again, this you'll be able to, you know, watch this podcast on the social media streams, and as well as it'll be an audio podcast. I'll put it up onto my actual audio podcast as well. So again, go out there and support these little Italian American heroes. You guys are heroes. What you're doing, because it's so important. And again, I want to thank you, Joe.
Thank you so much.
I am Anthony Sciglia, better known as Tony Mangia. We'll see you next time. Ciao for now.
At the Table with Tony would like to thank its sponsors: Rocco Muriale, Rob Quick, Joseph Cirillo, Raymond Guarini, Tom Gilmore, Oli G, Peter Ziza, Brian McGuire, Peter Ferreira, Rich Ottenstrauer, Anna Mavrianos, Antonio Pepinella, Anthony Ferraro, Sandra and Bob LaMotta, Mike Guerro, the Italian Enclaves Historical Society,